Money FM 89.3. Best of the evening runway. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
That's right, you're listening to Money FM 89.3. Time now for Market View, where we take a look at how the Singapore stock market is likely to close for the day, the biggest movers, sectors and companies to watch. As always, a quick recap of how we started. Well, Singapore shares were pulled into the negative territory this morning after global equities ended the prior week mixed. In early trade, the Straits Times Index was down 0.1% to 3,144 points after some 23 million securities changed hands in the broader market. Closing numbers are still firming up, but here's what I have on my screen right now. The STI currently down 0.3% and we're looking at 3,137 points. In terms of value turnover, that's 764 million Sing dollars. Gainers outnumbered losers 292 versus 250. Top five movers by value I've got here: DBS, OCBC, UOB, Yangtzejiang Shipbuilding, Sing dollars and SIA. Heavily traded securities included Oceanus, Seatrium and Tibev. Now, in terms of companies to watch, we do have Jobfa. The agri-food company today refused to comment on speculations about a privatization deal in a March 8th Bloomberg article. Now, meanwhile, from more on Singapore's local business sentiment to Chinese regulators asking large banks to support property developer Vanke, more local and international headlines are in focus today. And joining me on the line is Chong Se-Jing, co-founder and portfolio manager at Compounder Fund. Se-Jing, welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Great to have you on board. And Se-Jing, let's start with the Singapore stock market as usual. How has the STI fared so far today, particularly after Friday's sort of mixed U.S. non-farm payrolls numbers? Any surprises when it comes to the biggest movers today?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, the STI is down by around 0.3% today, with a nearly even mix of winners and losers. Most of the index constituents had gains or losses between plus minus 1%, so I don't see anything out of the ordinary. The only one that stood out for me was City Development, which ended the day with a gain of around 3.5%, I believe. And if you like, we can talk more about the company.
Right. Since you talked about CDL, let's go to that. City Developments Limited, or CDL, had on Friday initiated share buybacks for its ordinary shares on the open market. We are looking at an average price of $5.75 a share. Total consideration of 5.5 million Sing dollars. Now, how far is this a wise move on CDL's part? How would you read into the move?
So CDL rarely conducts share buybacks based on the data I have access to. Over the past 10 years, from 2013 to 2023, the company has bought back shares in only 2 years, and that would be 2018 and 2023. And the total amount spent was around $20 to $25 million in each of those years. So the most recent buyback is actually the first in over a year. And that 5.5 million spent over one day is actually pretty sizable when seen in the historical context. So I think looking at that, perhaps investors were excited that City Developments may have become a bit more serious about unlocking value in the company. The company's price-to-book ratio is currently about 0.6. And the only times City Development's price-to-book ratio had reached similar levels over the past 10 years was in the COVID years of 2020 and 2021. So buybacks, you know, if done when the company shares are priced lower than its intrinsic value, are a good thing for investors. And right now, City Development valuation looks low.
Okay, so indeed an attractive opportunity to deploy the capital, right?
Yep.
And zooming in on the other companies to watch surging, we do have Jobfa, which is an agri-food company. Today, it refused to comment on speculations about a privatization deal in a Friday Bloomberg article. Now, it said its key shareholders are approached from time to time to consider a variety of transactions that are typically assessed as a matter of practice. Now, any guesses as to what's to come? What would the basis be for privatization?
So the major shareholders of Jobfa, which supplies animal protein products such as poultry and pork, are the Santosa family, whom I believe collectively control nearly three quarters of the company's total shares. I think it's always hard to tell what is going on behind the scenes when it comes to privatization talks.
Yeah.
But when I was looking at the company's financials, I think it's possible to see that the Santosa family may be seeing some value in Jobfa shares. So Jobfa's business has historically been cyclical. You know, if you look at its return on equity, in good years, it can be above 20%. In bad years, it can be as low as 0.2%, which happened in 2017. Now, in the year that just passed, 2023, the return on equity was minus 3.9%. But there are signs, recent signs, that JobPlus business is actually picking up. So in the second half of 2023, JobPlus core profit after tax and minority interest was actually $22 million, up from a loss of $32 million in the second half of 2022 and a loss of $49 million in the first half of 2023. Now, at the same time, while the business is picking up, the company's valuation actually looks low on the surface.
Hmm.
Its price-to-book ratio is just over 0.4 at the moment. And if I assume that JobPlus can earn, say, a 12% return on equity over a cycle, you know, we're looking at a normalized price-to-earnings ratio of around just 3.5. So, you know, even if the Santosa family offers a tick-over price that is double what it is today, you know, you're still looking at a normalized price-to-earnings ratio of just 7. So maybe the family sees a value in where the company shares are trading at currently, but you know who knows. Yeah. So I actually have a big caveat here as well, and it is that you know when you're looking at a commodity type of business such as what JobPlus is in, you know, it's hard for even insiders, not to mention you know us as outside investors looking in, to develop confidence on what the over the cycle return on equity can look like. So you know a company in that kind of space that has a low price to book ratio today may still turn out to be an expensive when seen over the long run.
But in fact, if we look at the share price right now for JobPlus surging, it is up 13.95%. Mm-hmm. How would you read into the price movements today? How far is this within your expectations?
So I think in general, when there's news about a company potentially being privatized, there's often a sharp short-term reaction to it, a sharp short-term positive reaction to it. But it's hard to say, you know, if this reaction can sustain, especially if, you know, the privatization deal turns out to be untrue. So oftentimes what happens is that when the stock price can actually run up in the short run and then it can fall. So, you know, it really remains to be seen if the Santosa family is serious about trying to privatize the company shares. But like I said, you know, if you look at JobPlus' current share price and valuation, it looks low. You know, if you compare a potential business return that a company could earn over a cycle. So from that perspective, despite the current run-up in the share price today, there is still a possibility, especially if the family wants to privatize the company, that an even higher premium could come in.
If you're just tuning in, we're now in conversation with Chongse Jing, co-founder and portfolio manager at Compounder Fund. Now, staying in Singapore, surging Singapore's local business sentiment continues an upward trajectory, hitting a one-year high in the second quarter of 2024. Now, how far is this within your expectations? What does the positive outlook mean for SGX-listed counters, particularly those in the most optimistic sectors like construction and transportation?
So I invest in a bottoms-up manner, meaning to say I look at each company and think about its business prospects individually. And what I've noticed is that companies with similar businesses can often produce very different results. So, for example, if you go to the US, you know, we can look at Snap, which is the owner of the Snapchat social media app.
Yeah.
We can look at Meta Platforms, which I have a vested interest in, and it's the parent of Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp. So in the fourth quarter of 2023, Meta's revenue was up by 25%, while Snap's revenue only managed to grow by 4%, despite Snap's quarterly revenue of $1.4 billion being 30 times smaller than Meta's quarterly revenue of $40 billion. So the point I'm trying to make here is that a rising tide may not lift all boats. So I think it's a great thing that, you know, our local business sentiment in Singapore is improving, and it's a wonderful thing for Singapore's employees. But the business trajectories of two companies, even if they belong to the same sectors with a high level of optimism, may turn out to be very different. You know, if you're a construction company with a poor safety track record, you're likely to enjoy much lower growth than another construction company with a much better history in terms of worker safety. So I think it's important that investors scrutinize each individual company based on its own merits.
Don't mind me asking this, Sergin. What is the one counter that stood out to you when it comes to construction or transportation that you think will be having a more optimistic outlook looking at this year?
So I'm not that familiar with the construction sector within Singapore.
Yeah.
But again, I will point out, I will fall back to my statement earlier, which is that, you know, you have to look at the individual business history. Mm-hmm. And I think a construction company that could look really good would be one that has, you know, long history of securing government contracts and at the same time executing them really well. And of course, you know, having a good, solid, strong balance sheet so that they have the financial resources to be able to win any contracts that may fall their way.
And across the region, a surging Chinese regulators recently met financial institutions to discuss state-backed property developer China Vanke, and two sources said that's when they asked large banks to enhance financing support and they asked private debt holders to discuss maturity extension for China Vanke. Has the Chinese property market, more broadly, has it hit a trough half yet, in your opinion?
So I think there are two angles to the Chinese property market problem, and both of them are actually related. So the first angle is that it's the low demand for properties. So for example, if you look at Country Garden, its pre-sales of properties was actually down for 9 consecutive months as of December 2023, and the declines are steep. So Country Garden's pre-sales decline in December 2023 was actually 69%. Now the second angle is that the Chinese government had actually clamped down on the business and financial practices of Chinese property developers in recent years, and which led to a lot of them running into financial problems and ultimately defaulting on their debt. So this includes some of the giants such as Evergrande and Country Garden. The issue here is that the financial problems faced by these developers have actually scared away property buyers, and which adds fuel to the first problem that I mentioned, which is the lack of demand. So the recent move that you mentioned by Chinese regulators is actually the latest in a recent series of moves by the government to ease restrictions on the Chinese property market. So this could potentially help with buyer sentiment, but again, who knows? And I think ultimately what the property market in China really needs is an improvement in buyer sentiment.
Do you think authorities' hands are tight, though, looking at how they are doling out support and the speed at which they are doling out support, particularly for the property sector?
Yes, I think in some ways their hands are also tight. I mean, if you look at like data on, like the ability of property buyers to afford properties, in some of the tier one, tier two cities in China, the income to property price ratio or similar kind of ratio is actually really really high. Really low. So meaning to say that properties are not affordable at all, right? So I think that hands are also tied in the sense that it is difficult for Chinese home buyers to purchase properties. But that is a function of the price of those properties, and they have to spread a really fine line in terms of trying to improve the affordability of houses, while at the same time, not causing property prices to collapse. Because if they do, then there will be I believe there will be some form of like knock-on effects where, the financial wealth of Chinese citizens will then be heavily affected, which then can have a lot of knock-on effects to the Chinese economy. So I think it feels to me that the Chinese government is caught between a rock and a hard place.
Right. And finally, before we go surging, let's talk about something fun. Nintendo and US animation studio Illumination said the world's favorite Italian plumber. I didn't know he was Italian. Truth be told, Mario will hit the silver screen again in 2026, following the last movie's a huge success. Now, how far will this be a boost to both Nintendo and Illumination then?
So the last Mario movie was released, I think, in April 2023, which is in the second quarter of the year. Results for that quarter were great. Revenue was up 50%, operating income grew by 80%, and the company actually attributed the growth partly to an increase in Mario-related game sales. But in subsequent quarters, Nintendo's results have been pretty lackluster, with single-digit declines in revenue. So, if you look back at history, again, I guess the caveat here is that history is not a perfect indicator of the future, but, it helps to set certain expectations. So, if you look at like what has happened in the past, it's likely that, if there's a new Mario movie that's released in 2026, it will likely have a material direct positive impact in the short term on Nintendo because of an increase in Mario-related game sales and merchandising. But the direct long-term impacts are murky. Now, this being said, I think it's important for Nintendo to create consumer excitement, such as in the form of releasing good movies from time to time for its existing intellectual properties if it wants to continue monetizing them. So I'm interested to see if the second Mario movie can actually match or exceed the first movie in terms of the consumer excitement that we can generate. So I think that will have a big impact on the company's financial performance.
Right. Certainly looking forward to that. And now I'm thinking of Mario Kart. Thanks a lot, Serjing. That was Chong Serjing, co-founder and portfolio manager at Compounder Fund. Thank you very much for joining us on Money FM 89.3.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.